Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight is the 300th KVC Arts, and the sole focus of the program is in conversation with Eva Mikhailovna, with music from Eva and the Vagabond Tales. Eva's been on the show a few times in the past, looking at one CD or another, but now a look at videos of the band, new and old. Find these on YouTube, or better yet, at evaandthevagabondtales.com. Amongst the more recent videos from the band is for the song Bus. Into this show with Bus, we'll get to NAMM 2019 and Dynaudio and the video, but first let's talk about the song itself, the song Bus, or maybe the bus itself.
The bus itself, yes. Okay. So in 2013, 2014, my family, we had this 1980s Toyota RV, and my car broke down, so they let me drive it around, and it was kind of my home because I would just drive it around, I would run errands with it. I always had my guitar in the RV, and I would write songs. I would park it under shady trees and parking lots. I would go to the beach in it. It was horrible trying to find parking, but it was so worth it because it was so comfortable, and I would take it to shows. My band would come with me, and we were just, when we would get tired, we would just lay on the couch. It was really, really great. Bus. I called it the bus.
And this is one of those larger RVs that you'll see folks take out on the road and camp for months at a time kind
yeah.
of things.
Mm-hmm.
So many bands actually try to get to that at some point. You sort of started out that way because
yeah.
your car broke down.
yeah.
That's really cool.
I was so sad when we sold it. But yeah, it lives in our hearts still. Anyone who was in the band during then, like Al, he loves that thing. We still talk about it. yeah.
So the song Bus then, and now JoJo. You say JoJo and I came up with these songs, and I had to struggle for a second who JoJo was. I thought the cat's name is not, I know your cat's name is not JoJo. And then it finally hit me, you've named your guitar. JoJo
yeah.
is your guitar. That's sweet.
yeah. JoJo is my guitar. I brought it with me today. I named him after that Beatles song.
Get Back.
Yeah, Get Back.
Back.
And
I wondered.
Okay. It's because it's my traveling guitar. I got it for $25, and
hey.
It's a really bad guitar. But I don't know why. For me, it sounds really good. It's really beat up, and I'm not scared about anything happening to it. And I think because of that, it's lasted so long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That actually makes wonderful sense. If it was something pristine, I mean, you'd be babying it more than trying to hit that chord.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This song leads me to ask about something that I've really found myself asking people, I think only in the last few years or so. Is Bus about a relationship that you actually experienced, or is it a song written about, quote, that type of situation where it's more general, that sort of a thing?
I think it's inspired by a relationship, but it's mostly inspired by leaving. And during the time when I started writing the song, I already had regrets and nostalgia about future events that weren't even going to happen yet. I was seeing all the decisions I was making, and I could foresee that one day I'm going to regret this. And so I started writing a song about what it would feel like to leave and what I would feel like in the future. And after the song was already completed, actually the whole song poured out of me in one sitting, but I started recording it that week in my little laptop and everything. And then I kind of just put it away because I knew it wasn't the right time for it yet until years, years later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of songs just pigeonholed like that?
I call them the songs in my bookshelf in my brain.
Nice. JoJo, is this the only instrument that you've named that you play on a regular basis?
I have JoJo, and I have my guitar that I play at shows, and I think I let the fans name that guitar because I posted it on Facebook a long time ago, and they named it Ruby.
Ruby, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like Ruby a lot, but I also have an accordion. He doesn't have a name, but my first accordion player played it so much that when I look at it, I think, okay, that's Ivan, even though it doesn't have a name.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And so I'm glad you brought that up because last time I tried to get Eva to talk about just how many instruments she plays, but you will see Eva on the piano, on the guitar, the sixth string, that is, ukulele, kazoo, harmonica, oh, and the banjo. We find that in Winter, one of the many versions of Winter that people can find.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on now from the song for Bus to the video for Bus. And so this leads us to NAMM and the DynAudio traveling booth. Many folks wouldn't know, so first please share with us just what NAMM is.
NAMM is like a giant, giant convention for music. It lasts 4 days. There's a winter NAMM and a summer NAMM, and all musicians want to go there because it's like a giant guitar center. So they have like all these different varieties of instruments, and besides instruments, they have performances and they give speeches. It's a huge learning opportunity for musicians if they go, or anybody in the music business. I've gone 2 times already, and it lasts so long, and you get to learn so much. You get to connect with so many people. You get to meet the owners of all these different guitar companies and piano companies and all these things. There's seminars. There's all kinds of things going on at NAMM. I remember one of the coolest things I experienced there the first time I went was this humongous giant drum circle where all these people had drums, and there were probably about 200 people with drums.
Oh my gosh.
And you can just walk up and pick up a drum and start playing, and this man, he leads the whole thing and he tells you what to play, and he's like screaming with a microphone, and it was so fun. It's just like a industry convention. I used to think it was a festival, but it's not a festival. I thought I was going to go there and see shows, but there are shows, but it's mostly a convention, like where you get to learn and connect with different musicians and people in the industry.
Very cool. And so now talk then about DynAudio and the traveling booth that they have and they approached you with.
So what actually ended up happening is the first year I applied for NAMM, we got to play. The second year I applied for NAMM, we didn't get to play, and I was so sad because I was thinking, once you go there, you want to keep going every year.
Yeah.
And I don't know how else I would get in if I didn't play. So I got an email about applying for this thing called DynAudio, some kind of container. And I was thinking, okay, whatever, let me just apply. Maybe we'll be able to go. And then like a month later, I got an email. It looked like it was another language because the O had like 2 circles on it.
Okay.
And I was thinking, I think this is spam. But I decided to open it anyway. And it said, you've been accepted to play at DynAudio and Heard, the traveling booth. And so as I started doing more research on this thing, I started getting so excited because it's a full functioning studio with really, really nice equipment. And it's a container, like a shipping container turned into a studio.
Okay.
And they have, I think, 2 of them. And they travel all over the world and record different artists and festivals in beautiful places. And that was the first time they brought it to NAMM. So they got, I think it was 14 different artists to play in this thing throughout the whole NAMM weekend. I remember I have a friend who was working at NAMM, setting it up, the stage and everything. And he told me, everyone is so excited. There's going to be this giant container thing. And they're lifting it down with a crane. And they're so scared because the front of it is glass. So if they drop it, it breaks.
Yeah. Oh,
so everyone was so excited and nervous about this thing. It was like the biggest thing at NAMM that year. And I just remember when I realized, oh, that's the thing we're going to be playing in. So I started looking at pictures of it and everything. But finally, the day came when we had to go and play in it. And NAMM is so noisy. It's probably the noisiest place I've ever been to in my life, in a good way. There's just music playing everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you step into that studio, the door shuts behind you and it's absolute silence. It's like being in a studio, a real studio. We started recording music in front of an audience. People were watching us. We were performing for them. We were recording in front of them. And it was just such an interesting experience.
Wow.
I love what they do, Dynaudio. They support musicians and everything was free for us. They recorded high quality recordings for us for free. And they just gave us all the files at the end, and including they had a video crew shooting the whole thing. At NAMM, we recorded about 5 or 6 songs in front of a live audience. So it was kind of like a live show recording.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then
nice.
About 2 months later, we got an email and they were asking us to come to the desert in Joshua Tree to record a song all day with them. They were going to completely record this song, and that's when I got to choose which song I wanted to record. And then we chose Bus because it was ready and we were thinking of what to do with it and everything. I was really excited that out of the 14 acts they chose us.
Talk about this place that you were at. It's in the middle of the desert. Elmo's on the ceiling. Talk about the setup, because we went from shipping containers to Joshua Tree. And so if you watch the video for Bus, actually, there's kind of an overhead shot of the compound, so you can kind of see how it's laid out. But can you describe it to people?
It's actually a studio, and a lot of artists have recorded there, like Arctic Monkeys. But the Dynaudio shipping container got shipped there. They took it from NAMM and moved it to this studio location. And we had access to the eating area and the bar and the bathrooms and everything from the actual studio. But we recorded inside the Dynaudio shipping container. So the place is very interesting. It is in the middle of the desert in Joshua Tree. In the bathroom, there is a Winston Churchill recording that plays on a loop nonstop. And some of the people told me that they've been there for many years and it's been playing. It's never stopped playing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then there's Elmos on the ceiling, all around the ceiling. But the best part was the big Dynaudio booth. It was facing the sun during the day, but then during the sunset, you could see all the mountains started getting painted, and there were so many different colors. And since it's a glass studio, you could see through it, and it's so beautiful. And we got to record while being in the middle of nature.
Wow.
It was beautiful.
Now, something else about this song being so old. We're going to be talking, by the way, about songs that are fairly recent, some that are right now in development, some that are 5 or 6 or more years old. But this song, you said that Ashley could feel that the song didn't mean as much to you anymore since so much time had passed since you wrote it. And so you noted that he helped you sing in a way that you had never sung before.
Mm-hmm.
And just from that session, you learned so much more about your voice and what it can do. So I'm curious about that, what it was that he did.
So Ashley Shepherd, the producer for the whole song, he really took the time to work with each of us. I think he brought out the best in all of us. Because when we recorded in the past, we would always just like gather files from here and there, just mix things, put them together. But this whole session was each of us recorded that day. We recorded our parts that day. So he worked with each of us one-on-one. So every time one of us would record, the rest of the band would leave. So he got to just have that band member all to himself. And
he really
coached us, and he told us, oh, don't hold back there, or why don't you try something like this? And it really opened our mind to what we could do. So when it was my turn to record vocals, the sun had already set. It was nighttime, and the band, they got out and they got lawn chairs and they were sitting in front and looking at the stars, and I was singing. And I think he could feel that this song was old to me.
Okay.
So what he did was he helped me connect with the lyrics again. He said, well, why are you singing this line? Think of why you wrote the line. He was telling me, don't just sing it, feel it, really do what you need to do to feel it. Try to remember the smells, try to remember the memory, try to remember everything. And so I started remembering everything, and sure enough, it all started coming back. And that's why I feel like out of all the songs that I have, you can hear the emotion behind this one the most.
That is really cool. He sounds like a theater guy. He sounds like a lot of people that I've known in the past. Just bring yourself back to that. He was doing a kind of a Stanislavski approach to this, singing. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Did you mention that it was nighttime, but you had turned off the lights in the booth?
Yeah.
So it really was dark. You were just looking at.
Yeah. It was so cool because the booth itself looked like a spaceship with the lights on because everything around is black. All you can see is the stars and then this like white light inside the booth and the Dyne Audio logo. But then I asked if I could turn the lights off and there was a dimmer and I just turned all the lights off and I just sang to the stars in Joshua Tree. And
wow.
I mean, I've played music out in nature before. I love nature.
Mm-hmm.
I've played music. We've recorded videos out in nature. But I've never been able to experience such high studio quality right smack in the middle of nature. It was an unbelievable experience.
That's incredible. I hope that you're able to do something there again at some point.
I hope so, too.
Because this is, nice. We see you in the video, in what's been filmed. So this is great. When you say a music video, it doesn't capture it. This is almost like a mini documentary when you're watching the video for Bus. Well, and I'm asking that people check this out maybe after this program. But you'll see Eva playing guitar. You'll also hear the piano. So I presume there are overdubs. So that would have been you, presumably, playing the piano?
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Back now to Eva Mikhailovna for KVC Arts number 300 as we explore Eva and the Vagabond Tales. Music and videos of the band a person can find easily enough with a simple search on YouTube or simply at evaandthevagabondtales.com. Addressing something that we spoke about just a bit ago, the song that's not so much about something experienced versus the idea of an experience. So with that in mind, I'm curious about some songs, just really, I'm asking you to reach in to name any song, really, but I'm curious about maybe songs which might have been something specific, but you consciously chose to make it more general. Things could be more general to protect identities, but also really to make it more broadly relatable to people out there. Is this ever a conscious thought process for you when putting songs together or maybe rewriting songs?
Yeah. When I write songs, I tend to be very vague. I'm always scared someone will know what the song is about. So I try to be as honest as I can with the song without giving away too much.
Okay.
But I also love to relate to people. And I know that if I wrote about something way too specific, then maybe not as many people could relate. And I feel like music is kind of a healing thing. It's a way we can connect to each other. So I do want everyone to feel connected to my music. So I do tend to make it a little bit more broad and a little bit more vague so
nice.
That it won't be too obvious what it's about.
Staying with the video theme, the times that you've been in before, we were generally focusing on a CD or album. What I'm going to do is I want to revolve around a lot of videos that people can find with minimal digging, okay? Starting, say, at evaandthevagabondtales.com.
Mm-hmm.
There is also even the Vagabond Tales YouTube channel. So what are the other places that folks can find your music and CDs and album, whether they're just wanting to listen to a track or download or order the albums? Where are all the places for this?
The best place to find us is evaandthevagabondtales.com. Our website has absolutely everything on us. But lately, I've been encouraging a lot of people to find us on YouTube because throughout our whole existence, we've never really been the video type. But I recently found my new love, which is making music videos, putting a story behind all my songs. So I hope that people will go more to our YouTube now because I feel like I could tell more of a story with the videos.
There is a lot to find, more than I thought I would find, actually, Eva. And so I think we're going to look at this as if people went to your website and there's a lot of videos there to launch from. And some are just performance videos. Some are maybe in somebody's basement, but it's still panning across. Let's start with Train Travelers. This is a song from Letters from the Moon, but given a really nice treatment with the Yosemite video, filmed many times in different locations, then pieced back together as a complete song. So again, really, folks, make a note of checking this one out. Train Travelers featuring Yosemite, I believe, is how this one is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally cool. So just the idea behind this, even the featuring Yosemite, tell me everything about this.
The interesting thing about this video is that a lot of people thought we recorded over a song. We were just doing a music video over an actual recorded song, but we recorded live in every single shot, and then I pieced it all together. I pieced it together, and then on top of that, I layered some instruments to make it feel like it was one long song. But in reality, we recorded one verse here, one verse there, one verse there. We recorded in thunderstorms, on top of cliffs, in dangerous locations we did not advise to go to, in forests, in front of animals, horses, donkeys, deer.
There's you playing, and there's a couple of deer just you're playing and singing, looking over your shoulder. Yep, the deer are still there, singing some more. We have you wading through streams. We have you at the edge of a cliff. The thunderstorm, it going from, again, each of these scenarios that I just mentioned, these are all the various things that you'll have Eva singing this one song, but it's pieced together as one continuous flowing thing. Even some guest vocals, for lack of a better way of saying it. You know, it's some friends. I don't know who these people are. Meet them at the campsite?
They are rock climbers. They climb those huge cliffs, Half Dome, El Capitan. They're rock climbers.
Oh.
Yeah, and they're local to here, to our county.
Okay, oh, cool.
But they go up there every year. And they live there and they climb.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Train Travelers, that's an early favorite of mine. I was first exposed to you through Letters from the Moon. There's another video shot in Yosemite, and that is Demure. This one normally contains yodeling, right? Yes, I'm thinking of the right one, but we don't have it on this one.
Yeah, I think it's because when I made that video, I was in the process of still writing the song.
Okay, gotcha. So remind us again where and when yodeling even came about for you as a performer, as just even something to do. This is camping out somewhere, I think, right?
Well, yeah. I was in Yosemite again, and there was a lady. We were watching the meteor shower, and this lady, we got to talking, and she gave us a CD, a Nickel Creek CD, live. And there was a singer on the Nickel Creek band, and she was yodeling.
Sarah.
And she sang the song, I Want to Be a Cowboy's Sweetheart. And I loved the yodeling, so I started mimicking it. I was trying to sound like it. And ever since then, I started trying to learn how to yodel and incorporating it into my songs.
And I'm going to guess about the video for this one. Was this, again, one take, but it was multiple iPhones set up at different angles? Is this how this video came together?
Yeah, we just had different phones set up in different angles. Yeah.
Okay. Did you do a timestamp kind of clap? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Eva Mikhailovna for KVC Arts number 300. More at evaandthevagabondtales.com. Also on Facebook, and a lot to find on YouTube as well. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, online and mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. Well, now something else from Letters from the Moon. And again, we're really just going through videos that you can find if you just start at evaandthevagabondtales.com. You're going to find the videos for these songs that we're talking about, but a slight sidebar, bringing up Letters from the Moon again, because I want to know if it's still available. Is Letters from the Moon still available? Is the EP, the Delure EP, still available? And of course, Uncharted Ocean That one, brand new. I know you still have boxes of those, but the other ones, can people still get these?
Yes, they can. They're also available on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere where you can listen to music, they're all available. The physical copies of them, I still hand make myself. So it depends on how I feel that day. Okay. But they're always available. If someone buys them online, then I will have to make it and ship it to them. It's a one-person operation.
You know, that's something that's, I think, really more special. It's that when I got Letters from the Moon in the mail here at the station, it was, okay, it came in an envelope, but then I open up the envelope and there's this homemade envelope. This is one of my few CDs that doesn't fit on the shelf with the rest of the CDs because it's in a big envelope. But it's a homemade envelope, Letters from the Moon. But then also the Delure EP that's hand-stitched across it. And that's, I really love the do-it-yourself approach to these things. This is definitely one of my favorites. We've spoken about this one before, and it's another from Letters from the Moon. We've heard about this one on the air just a bit, but what I've never thought about with some of your songs, that it often feels like a journal entry, a diary entry, if you will. And whether or not this song did, I'm just curious where this song came from initially.
First line says, I'm down on the floor, can't move anymore. It did come from me sitting on the floor writing this song, and I felt very alone, I felt very empty, and I just started writing and that song just started coming out of me. Eventually, I worked out all the lyrics and made it kind of more universal. Not so much what I was feeling, but more universal. And it's nice because it's such an old song. It's probably like over 10 years old now for me, but I can still feel it when I play it. And I'm glad I made it universal because now I'm older and I can still relate to it.
You don't want to mention Bill Smith over and over again.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bill. I didn't mean to say Bill. Sorry, Bill.
I have yet to meet a Bill.
William Smith. Letters from the Moon, and another one that I've always loved, and that is Thieves. It's an old entry as far as the video world in that it includes Ivan McCormick, so that goes back several years right there. Ivan on the accordion, occasionally you'd see him in his drums, as well as the elusive Carol. I think I just might have seen her at the Back to the Grind show for the EP release.
Yes.
I have actually seen her play once with you guys. Then it's not just something you talk about or read about in books somewhere.
Yeah, she is real.
Okay.
She's one of those people where if you become friends, you stay friends forever.
Yeah.
Even if you don't talk.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. And you see on this video, she added some various harmonies that in later CDs that you've produced, I've asked you about this because you'll hear various harmonizing female voices, and these days it's all you just doing the overdub with another voice, right?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so Thieves also might be the song where at the press in Upland several years back, you told the audience about a song where I'd asked the story behind it, and you said that there wasn't one. Was Thieves that song?
Yeah. I specifically remember that was, you asked me the question. You said, what is this song about? And I thought it was being recorded live because it was one of my first radio interviews.
Okay, gotcha.
And I thought, oh, what do I say? I don't know what it's about. And then I was so surprised because when I listened back to it, it was edited out so nicely. so nice.
There's no story at all there because it is a bit of an adventure to this one. It's not a relationship song. We've got Highwaymen and Maidens on the Road. Where did it come from?
I think when I look back on it, I always imagine a kind of like a deserty town and then the sky is all dark and this thief and he's stealing stars. I'm thinking maybe it's about a person who's very secretive and I'm saying that I'm going to find you out. I'm going to understand who you actually are.
Nice.
I think maybe that's what it's about.
You better run, I'm going to find you. Yeah.
You better run, better run. I'm going to find you. Until I first met you, I was lonesome. And when you came inside, dear, my heart grew bright. And this old world seemed new to me. You're really swell, I'd like to admit you. Deserve expressions that really fit you. And though I've racked my brain open to explain all the things that you do.
Find me a Muse Duchesne. It's always a fun one. When and where and how did this song come into your repertoire?
So,
were you at a bar mitzvah somewhere?
What happened was, before I started performing music, I used to swing dance all the time. That was my whole life. I loved swing dancing. I used to perform at my college. I was taking dance classes. I was in a swing dance group. And locally in Riverside, we had free swing dance lessons and free social dancing every Monday. And I heard that song every single time. And I loved that song because it would always speed up and speed up and speed up.
Yeah.
And it was so fun to dance to. So when I started my band, I really wanted to play that song.
I could say Bella, Bella, even say Van der Barsh.
This is a fun one, and this is one that you'll, you know, whether or not you pull out the kazoo, it's a fun one. But when you do, I don't know why. Now, the kazoo, you know, people bring it out as a novelty, but it's fun. It works, and it's just, I don't know, it's a good time with that.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. It's music from Eva and the Vagabond Tales in conversation with Eva Mikhailovna for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts, show number 300. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play, and all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. More on Eva and the Band at evaandthevagabondtales.com.
And the sea
video in particular, The Sea Will Return You. This is a very new song. This is off of the very recent album Uncharted Ocean. This was also a bit of a first in ways for you, yes? As far as storyboarding and the shoot and I don't know what else, but I remember that after the video was done, you put out on Facebook saying, I wish someday somebody could ask me about the video process and what it was like.
Yes.
Here we are.
Oh, wow. I don't think we have enough time for this.
Yeah, so I mean, let's talk about what it was, the general theme behind it, what we were seeing in this.
When I started filming this video, I didn't even know what it was going to be about. I just had a general idea that it was going to be about a girl who's waiting on the seashore for her love to come back home. And I didn't know what the story would be or anything. I was thinking of getting someone to film it for us, but it was hard to find someone and we didn't have enough money. And that's exactly how my music started, is we never had money and we never could find someone to record us. So I ended up doing it myself. So that's the same way it happened with the video. I decided, let's just do it ourselves. So I watched some YouTube videos on how to record a music video, and the most important thing was to have a storyboard. But at that point, we had already started filming some scenes of me like singing to the ocean, and I thought, okay, well, we can still use this. But I ended up making a storyboard of these stick figures, and I kept changing the storyboard. Eventually, I had a whole story that was 5 minutes long, and I just went out and we would shoot. Jacob, my drummer, he would shoot the scenes for me, and we would have to keep coming back and reshooting and reshooting, and it lasted like 6 or 7 months. And it was a really long process, and it was a lot of fun because we shot all up and down the coast. We saw so many beautiful places. We saw so many beautiful beaches that we never thought we would see. And when people watch the video, they think we were in another country because the beaches don't look like the beaches down here. And one of the places we shot in was the Salton Sea because it just looked so empty and dead and so sad, and it was perfect for the song. One thing that happened was we shot it during the winter time, so it was freezing. And one part that I thought was an important part of the story is that when the person is leaving, they walk into the ocean because the ocean kind of represents this endless place of opportunities where you go and you learn all these hard life lessons, and then you get washed back up having learned everything. So we needed someone to walk into the ocean, and the person in that video, which is Ben Benjamin,
KBCR's Benjamin Perper.
Yep. He had just joined the band, and he was willing to be the actor that does this. So he handed me his suitcase, which represented all his regrets and all his baggage, and I was holding the suitcase and I was singing to him as he walked out into the ocean fully clothed during December winter time. He was so miserable, but I was miserable too because I had to go in there after him and film him suffering in there.
He said that you got the underwater film shots for that stuff. We were talking about that. He also mentioned there were no lifeguards on duty and you weren't supposed to be swimming. Technically, you weren't swimming. You were just walking out into the ocean fully clothed.
We were more like drowning. Yeah, and then the final shot of it, I had to walk into the ocean because at that point I'm giving all my baggage away to someone else. So it's kind of like a never-ending cycle of people giving their relationship baggage to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. So I had to walk in the ocean fully clothed, and I learned never walk into the ocean with a long dress on because you can drown.
Yes.
You can definitely drown.
You know, I just said yes, like that takes me back to the time when I was wearing a long dress and went into the ocean. But yeah. Well, something that maybe came from that video, and hey, whether it was an enjoyable observation or one valuable lesson learned as far as video making, did you take anything away from that?
Yes, actually. First, if you can't afford to make a video and you really want to make a video, just make a video. One of the shots on that video is a shot of a yacht that we stayed on that I probably talked about on this show before. And I shot that on an old Samsung phone. So it's really bad quality, but it adds to the sadness of it. And another thing that I learned is not to get too attached to certain shots, because when I look back, I'm thinking, oh, I should have used a more clear shot in this spot, but I was just so attached to it at that moment that I wanted to use that one.
Gotcha.
Don't see the forest for the trees. Don't not see the forest for the trees.
Don't see the ocean for the water.
Thank you.
song Winter and the re-release of its earlier form with a video to accompany. Now, this song was new when I interviewed Eva for the first time, just shy of 5 years ago. The video that was just released on the day that we're speaking, this was actually from 2015 or so?
That video was actually from 2017.
Okay, well, talk to me about wanting to even re-release this older version. What made you think about going to this? This is yet another song that goes back quite a few years for you, but it was one that got a reworking for your newest album. But now you've gone back and re-released a previous version of it.
Yeah, and it might seem a little bit confusing to do it that way, but I've always wanted to have videos to my songs, stories to my songs. And when we first released our EP with the song Winter on it, I wanted to do a video for it, but I was procrastinating. And a year after I released it, I started filming a video for it, but I never finished it. So I've been having a little bit of off time right now, and I've been going back on my computer and trying to see what I could do, and I really wanted to release that song again. I just wanted to release a video for it because I already had the video and I had a story for it. And when I filmed the video, it was to the older version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There's one line in there, by the way, right where it's saying, "I know who you are." You're showing your hands full of mud or finger paint or something like that. Is this a random shot or is this connected to the story?
It's connected to the story that's in the video, and it's black ink and it's coming through my hands, and throughout the whole video you can see everything changing, like everything getting covered with black ink, and it's kind of representing that someone's kind of invading my life and kind of taking over. And while I was trying to put this video together, I didn't really know exactly what it was about, but someone today commented a really nice comment on YouTube. They're saying that the red ink that's falling in the background, it's kind of like a bleeding heart. And then the black ink represents this empty void that comes after your heart has already been drenched, basically. I don't know if that's exactly how they worded it.
Oh, wow.
But it made sense, and I thought that's exactly what I think I wanted it to look like. And it was really fun shooting this video too, because I shot it myself and I did a little bit of an experiment. I got a jar and I got a little plant and I put the plant in the jar, filled it with water, and then I started throwing different ink in there. And the flower kind of represents my situation. So you can see kind of how everything goes in sync with each other.
We can see this one in a different light, literally and figuratively, than on that one. Okay, wow, okay, cool. There's yet another take on winter, which folks can find out there, and this is the four of you huddled in the cold somewhere. I don't know what this video was for, other than I think there was a point where you were going to try to record a video at a different location, just somewhere off in the country. You were going to do that. Is that from this period?
Yeah, the very first time we recorded it was in the woods, in the snow. I just wanted to start recording things just in different nature places. It was sad, and I had just finished learning the song with the band.
Gotcha. Okay, and now something noteworthy about this one, by the way, is that nobody's playing any of the instruments that you would generally see them play. You are on banjo. Al is on ukulele. Jake, normally on drums, is playing a six string. And then Jasmine has some kind of mouth-powered recorder-slash-keyboard thing.
Yeah.
Tell me what this is.
Melodica.
It's Melodica, okay. I knew there was a better name than mouth-powered recorder-slash-keyboard kind of thing. And that's just cool to see anytime anybody switches up like that. Thank you. there was something that I had almost forgotten about, and I'm so glad you reminded me. You wrote the music for a commercial that is in India.
So our label, Mother West, Charles Newman, he set me up with this company called BMG. They put music in different commercials and things like that. They have playlists where different people could choose the song that they want for whatever they're working on. So they asked me to write a song about being either better together or being better apart. And for some reason, I chose it to be about being better together, which is not really typically what I would write about. But I wrote the song and I sent it to them. And Charles wrote like a organ part and he added all these other instruments to it. On that song, I played guitar and banjo. And then I didn't hear anything about it for many, many months. And then all of a sudden, I started getting all these comments on YouTube of all these people. Oh, I came here from Star Movies. I came here from Star Movies. And it's just hundreds and hundreds of comments. And all these people are saying, this song was so hard to find. And we found out that it got placed in a commercial for Star Movies India. It was a special campaign they did for a bunch of movies about couples. And it's a commercial about how this rainy season, curl up with your favorite couples. And it has all these different, like Iron Man, and they have Titanic. And our song is playing in the back of all these movies. So it was really, really cool. And we got a bunch of new fans from India because of that. It was just really awesome to see that. And I was trying to reply to all of them. I was trying to reply to all of them and say, here's our YouTube channel, listen to more of our music here. But then I think YouTube blocked me because I was trying to reply to all 600 of them. And I think YouTube thought I was a bot, like a robot and spam, so they blocked me.
She's not a bot, she's just up all night.
Yeah, so I can't even get across to my poor fans in India, which is so sad.
Oh my gosh.
Music world. It's a tragedy.
And this is a song, We're Better Together. It is different in that, Eva, there are a lot of songs we will hear you sing. There are sad songs. It's maybe a song about a breakup. But I have to say, though, some of these breakup songs are fun songs.
Mm-hmm.
You're tapping your foot and putting your head left to right to left to right to this breakup song. I don't know. This happens with your music. It's a good thing. I don't have anywhere to go with that other than that.
Thank you.
I know that you have songs that you're writing just because you're that type of person. You're creating. That's what you do, left and right. But the thing is, some of the songs that you have floating around that are still being worked out, are these aimed at a new album for the future? Or, you know, do you have songs that you just end up writing and then they end up on an album? Or you have all these songs and you look and suddenly discover there's a common theme? How does this happen when you're working toward an album? Or again, are these even something going toward an album?
Yeah, there are definitely songs we're working on with the band right now, and they're all very new, and it's really new to me to be showing the band this early in the process, but it's also the first time we're actually working together to arrange the songs, and I'm letting the band write their own parts to the songs, which has been really, really exciting. So to answer the question, usually I just write songs, and then when it's time to make an album, I pick and choose which ones will be on the album. But right now, it seems like everything kind of has a really nice theme. I'm not sure what the theme is yet, but they kind of blend very well together musically. And so in order to finish the process faster, I'm taking my band to the desert again in January, and we're going to get an Airbnb, and I'm going to get a lockbox for our phones. I'm going to make us lock our phones. And then we're going to spend a couple days just writing and arranging and just finishing everything so that we'll be studio ready to record everything and get another album hopefully by next year.
Close to wrapping up, but I have to say, and now for something completely different, Lonely Heartbeats.
I stay at home every night. You run to paint the city lights. How do I see?
This is your 80s synth pop alter ego band. You've got to have a better description than what I just broke down.
We call it synth pop 80s electronic. Yeah.
Okay, you didn't say much other than what I just said. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right, and so you've had a couple of performances of this, sort of playing with it. I don't know if the wig is always a part of it, but you put on a different persona, and Jake is active in different ways. In See You Again, for example, we've got Jake doing some vocal work much more prominently than some of the background stuff that he might do with even the Vagabond Tales. You're putting together songs that have an 80s synth pop feel to them, so that was one example, but do you do some covers as well? You were working out Riding on the Metro at my house not too long ago. You were working out that song. You were just sort of noodling around with that one at my house.
Yeah, that could definitely end up with Lonely Heartbeats. We also do a cover, like an 80s synth pop cover of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. We do it in a synth pop 80s electronic style, and that one's really fun to play.
That would be, I mean, it's a fun song anyway, but does this exist somewhere?
I think there's a small recording of it on our Instagram. But we're working on also releasing something early next year, early 20. Actually, I don't know how for sure this is. I don't know if I should be saying it, but okay. I should be saying it so that I can make a deadline for myself.
Say it.
I think next year is a leap year, right? I said we're going to release something on February 29th, 2020. I already posted about it.
Yeah. So there's going to be something new from Lonely Heartbeats coming up in 2020. Cool. And again, this is Eva's alter ego. This, I wouldn't even call it a side project because I'm not sure if we're going to start seeing albums coming out from this, but this is just a fun thing to watch for in the dark streets of Hemet or somewhere that we might see this.
Yeah.
You know I'm not staying. It's so nice.
Eva, I really can't thank you enough, truly, for being a part of the 300th KVC Arts. You have been a part of this show several times when various albums have come out, but in that time also. And I've enjoyed every single show that I've ever gone to of yours, and I don't know how many there's been by now. It's phenomenal every time, and I appreciate you as a performer and as a friend and as being a part of this number 300.
I appreciate you too, and I really, really appreciate that you opened my album when I sent it to you. Usually people just throw it away, probably at radio stations, but like I've said many, many times, KVC Arts, from the very first time I've been on KVC Arts, it has opened so many doors for my band. I remember the very first interview I ever had with you. You painted us in such a wonderful light, and your interview was so good that it gave us a new sense of quality. We felt like we were a quality band. We went from the streets to we have something to say about ourselves now. And because of that, it opened so many more doors. You introduced us to American Parlor Songbook. We got to be on that show. And then just being backed by and supported by NPR and you and KVC Arts has just been such a huge honor.
That's greatly appreciated from you as well. I'm at a loss. Just thank you again, Eva.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on number 300.
Yeah, well, these are centennial shows. They have to be special. And that meant it pretty much had to be you. So thank you.
It had to be you.
You. It had to be you. I'm going to fade out while we do this. Na da da da. I don't know the words, but I know the tune.
This edition of KVC Arts has been devoted entirely to Eva and the Vagabond Tales in conversation with Eva Mikhailovna, a wonderful way to celebrate show number 300. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Eva, and here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Benjamin Perper, and an extra big thanks once again to Sharina Wad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts are composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play, and all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. And David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.